Great to have you with us here on WPR News. A big thanks to everybody who donated during our year-end member drive. With your help, we received over 2,000 donations. Support from people like Dave and Lois and Madison make WPR's essential service possible. And if you missed the member drive, still time to join in with your gift. You can go to WPR.org. As we turn our attention to a new book, the title of the book is The Rise of Breeze Stevens Field, Madison's Park Ballpark and the Team That Made It Home. And my guest in the studio with me, David Michael Miller, is the person who wrote this book. And it's going to be fun talking with him about Breeze Stevens Field and all of the sporting events and so forth that happened at Breeze Stevens Field. Maybe you have a memory of the stadium from years back. Give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. David Miller, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
You know, as I was reading the book, I was thinking about my own participation at Breeze Stevens Field. You know, I've been in Madison a long, long time, and I was starting to count up hours. And I mean, I've spent hundreds and hundreds of hours in Breeze Stevens Field. It's an amazing amount of time over the years. We'll probably get to some of those times involving football and wrestling and everything else. But you're a lifelong resident of Madison, and you've got a family connection with Breeze Stevens Field.
Yeah, yeah. My grandfather, Cliff Adkison, he was the caretaker and groundskeeper of the field from 1938 till when he retired in 1964. And, you know, he was a farm boy from Grant County, and he liked to tinker and stuff, but he seemed like the perfect person to look after the field. He was constantly battling the weather to keep the field in shape, which was ultimately a losing battle. But, yeah, he was there, and everyone knew him. And then in the wintertime, he tended the ice to the Madison Curling Club. So he was an all-season.
All-season guy. So was he part of the inspiration? I guess, why did you write the book?
Well, I was doing genealogy about my mom's side of the family. And when I would do research, I'd found out that he'd been quoted in like some of the daily papers by sports writers on field conditions before a big game and so on. And when I was going through like the newspaper archives online, that I realized all these things happened at Breeze Stevens Field. I had no idea that the Chicago Cubs played there three different times. The Chicago Bears played there. There were all these Negro team players who had played there, like Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson. And it was like one event after the other, and I just thought, wow, this was really a center of the community back then, kind of when Madison was sort of a small town in a way. And it was a story I never heard about and never read about, and I thought, well, I'm going to tell that story.
Well, I'm glad you did. You know, you solved one problem for me right off the bat, because I wondered, I assumed that the field was named for two people, Breeze and Stevens. And then I find out it's one person, Breeze Stevens.
Yeah.
And he was, an attorney? And
well, he was like a corporate attorney that became the mayor of Madison for one term. It wasn't necessarily that successful, but he really made his mark as one of the University of Wisconsin regents. But he really had nothing to do with the field. He's just the one who kind of picked up the parcels and assembled it, but he didn't have any plan or anything. And it was really his widow, Elizabeth Stevens, who worked with people in order to donate the field like 20 years after Breeze Stevens had died.
He bought up lot by lot a whole block, basically, is what he did over time.
Yeah, and a lot of what he was doing was land speculation, and he was related to people like certain senators and leaders of the Democratic Party and the northern part of the Democratic Party. And yeah, he was out to make money for all sorts of clients out east and big corporations and so on. And
well, I've as I said in the beginning, I spent a lot of time at Bree Stevens Field when I was a kid. My friend's grandfather was a big wrestling fan, and he would take the three of us to wrestling meets, professional wrestlers, where we saw the a lot of wrestlers, Jimmy Demetral, mm-hmm. and the Sheik of Araby, and
so you said you saw the Sheik of Araby at Bree Stevens Field.
Not only that, but we knew he was the villain always,
right?
And
yeah.
So this is, I'll give you an idea of my age. We were young kids, and we all had pea shooters, and we took the pea shooters to the wrestling match, and when the Sheik of Araby was up against the ropes, we blasted him with our pea shooters, blowing a little right peas at him. So I mean, I was a young kid,
right? You know? Well, I mean, it was a blast. I mean, people—that's the stuff that people remember. Now, and also, I mean, was that the match that Joe Louis was in when he was a wrestler? He wrestled there. One time near the end of his career.
I don't think it was. I don't think it was, although we might have been at that one. It's been, you know, that's been a long, long. I was probably, 9, 10 years old at the time, so it was a long time ago.
Yeah, I got to say, part of a job I do is I drive taxi in this town, and what we do is take a lot of seniors to appointments and so on. And you find out they went to high school in Madison, and I go, oh, you ever go to Bree Stevens Field? And they just light up,
oh, yeah.
And they got all sorts of stories, and, oh, I was in the band, and yeah. I mean, all these things.
Well, it was, I went to Madison East High School, and we played football there. So I spent a lot of hours at Bree Stevens that way. And it was originally, it wasn't built for necessarily for soccer, or it was built for baseball. And she, when Mrs. The widow Stevens sold it to the city of Madison, I'm not mistaken, the deal was, she gave them a deal, but it had to be a sports venue. That's kind of how it got going.
Yeah, that was one of her stipulations, one that it be named for her husband. And the other was that it be solely an athletic facility. But that was sort of broken in the first year it was open, because they'd hold these neighborhood pageants from all the different city parks, and everybody would turn out, and it was a great community event. And who was going to quibble about something like that? But yeah. Over time, there were other more non-athletic events. And
But baseball was, the baseball, the Madison Blues, a guy by the name of Ted Lanahan, I think, kept her going in the baseball part of things.
Yeah, it was built primarily for the schools. And that was the thing that was kind of, Madison was sort of a spot of shame for them, is that all these other cities, Stoughton and Sheboygan and Beloit and Janesville, they had athletic fields, they had their own baseball teams, but Madison didn't have that. Madison, the great capital city, the site of the University of Wisconsin, didn't have an athletic field for its high school. So that's what really lit a fire under people to get things going. And then also, to have the Madison Blues played there. And when they started there, they were arguably the best baseball team in the state. They'd played 3 years before at Kip Field in Madison, right behind Madison Kip Corp.
Yeah.
But they were a huge hit, and they brought in all these other teams from leagues, and also they had a lot of exhibition games against Negro League teams and other international clubs. So there was all sorts of things going on with them.
A local newspaper columnist who I actually am old enough to have read was Roundy Coughlin. And he was instrumental, I think, in getting the stadium built, actually, and then in promoting it and keeping it going.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you've been around Madison, you know what a beloved character he was. He was a longtime columnist, sports columnist in the State Journal. He started out in the Capital Times. But yeah, he got the baseball team started. He just decided to throw a fundraiser himself and invite all his buddies. And sure enough, all these businessmen started writing checks, you know, for the new team, for the new field. You know, in a way, I'm not suggesting they change the name of the field because Bree Stevens Field has such a nice ring to it. But it should be Roundy Coughlin Field. I mean, it wouldn't have happened without him.
Yeah. Steven Stoughton has a comment for us, I believe. Let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning. Or is it afternoon? Yeah, it's afternoon. Friday. Oh, so, hey, I've played soccer on Bree Stevens back in the 90s. And it was amazing. The crown on the field is so high that from one side of the pitch to the other, you could hardly see the other player. Like, you might see his head. So given you have a history with a groundskeeper, is there any history on the crown, why it was so high?
Well, I can't speak specifically to that time period. My story kind of winds up sort of in the early 80s. But I think I just assume it was done because of drainage, that they wanted all the water runoff. But as what is written in the book, it was always a struggle to keep the field in shape.
And, well, it was built on a marsh. I mean, those.
It used to be a swamp, basically. A lot of the east side strip there along East Washington Avenue. I mean, they had a hard time filling that property to make it playable on.
Yeah, and that crown, I don't think that crown, I'm pretty sure. I've watched a lot of matches there in recent years, and you do write about that. Your last chapter or two gets into that.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to chop off the story sort of around World War II just to kind of keep the focus on the baseball team, but I kept finding out more and more things, and I just thought, oh, my God, I mean, where do I end this? And I finally stopped at about 1982 when the Madison Muskies made their debut there, and after that, baseball wasn't played there anymore. But, yeah, I mean, the soccer, I mean, it's revived the place, and now it's, from what I understand, it's... The field is more popular and profitable than ever, and the general manager was telling me that they average just about one event per day there.
Yeah.
So the facility is you know...
constant use.
Yeah, and it's as popular as ever, and if you've seen... I mean, you can't go around in this town without seeing the pink flamingos on everybody's gear and so on, so for the Madison Forward soccer team... it is more popular ever. And then, of course, it's the concert venue out of nowhere. You know, you have Willie Nelson playing there, Weezer, Robert Plant, just amazing. Steely Dan, I mean.
Keith in Lake Wisconsin will give you a chance. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Larry. I just have to reminisce a little bit. 1968, I was on the Wanakee High School squad, and we played Madison East. And the first thing, we had to get to the park early at Bree Stevens that day to learn how to play the ball off the short right field wall. And that's just a memory that has always stuck with me.
Oh, and that wall, you tell some pretty good stories about guys like Pat Richter or Elroy Hirsch who could whack one over the that right field wall.
I mean, the thing to say about Bree Stevens, it was really not cut out to be a ballpark, a baseball park.
Yeah.
It's just that it had a short right field, and it just got to be ridiculous. And when the Muskies played there, it was just hilarious. The fans would chant whenever there was a bus coming down East Washington to go bus, 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 to kind of tell the batter, you know, aim for the bus over the field, you know, over the wall.
And they actually built the wall up or something, didn't they?
Well, actually, that happened during the Depression, is that there was just a chain-link fence with canvas thrown over it originally. But during the Depression, all these New Deal dollars were available, and the mayor, Albert Schmiederman and so on, said that we need some public works projects and putting up a wall around the field was made to order, and they used limestone from Madison Quarry, and it was something it turned out to be just great and took all these people off the relief rolls, and it's just beautiful now. It's just a imperfect step with sort of the prairie school design at the grandstand, and there's no other place like it.
No, there is not indeed. Talking today with David Michael Miller, his book, I had a lot of fun reading through it and reminiscing in my own way about it. The book is titled The Rise of Breeze Stevens Field. Madison's Ballpark is the subtitle, Madison's Ballpark and the Team That Made It Home. Maybe you've got one to share. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Miller for WPR News. Thanks for joining us today on WPR News. Larry Miller here. Just a note on Garden Talk tomorrow, Woody Kerwin, we'll talk about landscape lighting, and then we'll talk with Jacob Grace about the Savannah Institute. It's a nonprofit promoting agroforestry. Right now, we're looking at the book, The Rise of Breeze Stevens Field, with its author, David Michael Miller. And again, you can join in 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. Let's talk about some of the folks that you wrote about and some of the things that happened. One of the things that interested me, and I'd kind of forgotten about, was the UW played games oftentimes at Breeze Stevens Field. Dinee Mansfield was the coach.
A few games of the baseball team played there, and they also played the Madison Blues quite regularly. UW football team, the varsity team, never played there, but they did have some other games going on there, and they also did play other Big Ten teams, like you say, Dinee Mansfield and so on. We play Northwestern or Purdue or so on. And you
talk a bit about Elroy Hirsch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He broke through in 1942 on the UW football team when, you know, everyone knew him as Crazy Legs, and they almost won the Big Ten title. Mm-hmm. It's during the war. He signed up to be a Marine, and before he was kind of sent to boot camp, someone suggested, we should play a baseball game in Madison. And he was on, when he was in Madison, not only was he on the university team, but he was also on various city league teams, and like Badger Sporting Goods and so on. He just wanted to play. And he also would play basketball and do other things. But there was a big, someone suggested a big game that would be a war bond rally. He was on the Badger Sporting Goods team, and it was the full stadium and so on. And sure enough, the bases got loaded, and then Elroy came to the bat and just slapped one, a grand slam, and then the crowd went nuts. And it just so happened that it had been planned that there'd be an auction of some of Elroy's trophies, like his track shoes and the football from a 1942 game, and the bids on them were just astronomical, and it just raised so much money, and it was just such a great community event that everyone could share in. It was a real wonderful moment.
And Pat Richter may have played one sport or another more than almost anyone else. Pat's a great guy, by the way. I served on the athletic board when he was director of athletics here at UW.
Yeah, I think he really basically grew up at Breeze. I mean, he was a bat boy for one of the city teams, and then he was a manager for one of the little league teams, and then soon enough he was on the East High football team. His father, I guess, was a big football captain in his day. And, Pat Richter was an all-rounder. He was a great basketball player, baseball player, all of these things. It's just wonderful. And then, he went on to, become the athletic director of the University of Wisconsin. I'd like to think all that experience sprung right out of Bree Stevens Field on East Washington.
And we can go back to wrestling for a minute, too, because I think that was kind of an important time. At least there was an important individual, Jimmy Demetral.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He was just... Talk about him, because, you know, we have Demetral Field, for example. It was an honor given to him. But what was Jimmy Demetral like?
Well, he was a Greek immigrant. He came to America in 1912 and got a job, you know, working factory and so on. And his original name was Nicholas Zarakos, but he began sort of wrestling around the Chicago area, and he had a mentor, this other wrestler named William Demetral, who was also from Greece. And he convinced Jimmy to, you know, pose as his brother like he'd done with other things and, you know, have him on wrestling cards and so on. And that's what he did. And Jimmy had his first match here in Madison at a pavilion that used to be at Olin Park. And after he won his match, he announced to the crowd that he was going to move here. He loved it here. He trained with the UW wrestling team, and he worked out at the Y and everything. And he lived here for, you know, the next 60 years.
And promoted, I mean, he promoted a lot of things here in Madison, including Bree Stevens Field, and was really honored for his work.
Right, and he held annual wrestling cards, benefit cards, to benefit to disabled children and to, like, let them go to kiddie camp and, you know, enjoy a camp out. And he was just such a colorful character. Everyone knew him, and... He was a bona fide quality wrestler. He won a world champion middleweight title in 1928, and then a few years later he won the light heavyweight title there. So, yeah. and then he also did things like he wrestled bears.
You make a buck one way or another.
Well, and he promoted in it. This was, you know, the kayfabe and everybody and all the, you know, having these heels come in and costume and be acting like these villainous foreigners and all these things, all the wrestling stuff you see today.
The Bree Stevens Field itself had gotten into a lot of disrepair in our last couple of minutes to talk about that and the rejuvenation to what it is today, but it was in pretty bad shape.
Well, right, and the thing was, it was just from overuse. It was the only lit stadium for a while, and all the area high schools played there, and including, places like Edgewood High, you know, mm-hmm. that weren't necessarily part of the city school district. And just from overuse, it just got torn up all the time, and it just, it was nothing that my grandfather could have done. You know, it just meant constant resodding and, throwing sand on everything. And it just got to ridiculous, and I guess some kids got hurt playing football there, and so finally the city decided we need an alternative field. So they started building something at Warner, but it was really Mansfield Stadium when it was built behind today's Memorial High School back in the late 60s. That's what really took over with a decent field with a track. And then... the prep school games kind of moved away from Breeze, and it just wasn't the place that it used to be.
And there wasn't money, or at least there was a willingness to spend a lot of money on it.
No, there wasn't. But, I mean, it did, you know, they did after in the 80s decided it was going to be a dedicated soccer facility, and through time it got to be more and more popular. And then flash forward to the year 2014 is when they decided to put artificial turf in. And that just changed everything, because now they weren't spending all this money and working on the field all the time. And now they just had a field that was ready to go anytime. And it really turned things around. It's kind of an irony, my grandfather being the groundskeeper there. But the thing that really revived the field was putting in artificial turf.
Isn't that amazing? And now we've got a venue. We've got the very popular U.S. Soccer League Madison Forward Soccer Club and Ultimate Frisbee Association, Madison Radicals.
Yeah, yeah. People and these teams, from what I understand, they love playing there. They love playing this in this old facility. It's a real matter of pride for them.
Yeah, it a lot of work had to be done to fix the place back up again and actually make it safe.
Yeah.
For people, but in the end, we wound up with a facility, as you said in the beginning, that gets used almost every day of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an amazing story, and we haven't begun to touch on all that you've got in the show.
Well, I guess you'll have to have me back sometime, huh, Larry?
I guess I will, David. Thank you so much for being with us. David Michael Miller is the author of The Rise of Breeze Stevens Field, subtitled Madison's Ballpark and the Team That Made It Home. A really fun talking with him. Take a look at the book. You'll probably be like me if you're of my age and think back to all of the times you spent at Breeze Stevens. And you'll hear about some famous people as well. Great to have you with us today. Always great to have our team, Claire Kniper, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, Jeff Robbins. Big thanks. And executive producer Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mehler.